The views and opinions expressed on this show are purely the views and opinions of the person who made them, and do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the show's commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. As the restriction on our God-given right to free speech manifests itself throughout the world, we are inspired by Jesus Christ's immortal words, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And we reserve the rights to all our words. Thank you, and now enjoy the show.
To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticise. You are listening to ACH. I'm Andy, your host, and today I would like to welcome back my good friend, Dr. Eric Carlston. I'm going to bring him up right now. Eric, are you with me?
Yeah, greetings, Andy. Always good to be continuing our discussion. Gosh, we started in 2016, and now this is show number 58. And we've covered the waterfront of topics, so I really appreciate your tremendous efforts, your consistency, and your, dedication to getting the truth out. And this is what we need in the world. So thank you for that. And I just thought, we should go revisit this climate change fraud issue, because this is so central to my life and my career as a physical geography professor of 30 years. But I'll go a little deeper into my own story, which will show that it actually has affected my entire life, professionally and personally. But I thought it'd be nice to start with a quote from 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, 9 through 12. To kind of set the stage, we know we've had a communist revolution. We're in a communist revolution. It's a Bolshevik revolution. We know we live in a castle of carefully constructed lies created by, PR agencies, intelligence agencies, in order to dupe us and to confuse us and to take us down. So these lies can be very, very dangerous for us, because they separate us from reality. The quote is, "The coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan, with all power, signs, and lying wonders, and with all unrighteous deception among those who perish, because they did not receive the love of the truth, that they might be saved. And for this reason, God will send them strong delusion, that they should believe the lie, that they all may be condemned who did not believe the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness." Almost as if God is saying, okay, I, sent my son. He told you the way it was. You crucified him. And I'm a little fed up, So he sends this strong delusion. And this, I'm afraid, is what we're up against. We're up against, an enormously gigantic spiritual war here. And those of us who are, slugging away, trying to correct this continual onslaught of lies, have a facing an uphill struggle. But that's our struggle. So let's continue. And let's get into this climate change fraud, because I taught 30 years at three universities. I was a physical geography professor. I got a PhD in 1981 and from the University of Calgary. And it was in basically the field of geomorphology and soils and paleoclimate. I was using soils and geomorphology to reconstruct past climate changes, and I was working in the Glacier Park area of Montana, the Waterton Park area of Alberta. I was working the quote-unquote border fault, because the glacial chronologies from the United States did not match up with those from Canada. And there's a fairly simple reason for that, and that is that Canada is the zone of erosion and the United States is the zone of deposition for the huge Laurentide glaciers, which were, up to two even more miles thick. Just scraped off the soil and scraped off the remnants of older glacial events. So anyway, in the United States, of course, the glaciers would have come down. These big continental glaciers would have come down numerous times, and several times at least, and left their mark. You know, and people would look at these glacial deposits with soils in them and try to, you know, figure out by various dating mechanisms, you know, when that occurred. And so many geologists and physical geographers and other scientists over the years have dedicated their lives to looking at the issues of climate change. It's a fascinating problem, extraordinarily complex. But then, of course, the ruling elite got involved, unfortunately, with the issue because they decided that, in 1962, the CIA wrote a memo and said, we want to control the weather. And... And of course, in 1952, the CIA wrote another one of these small memos and said, we want to see if we can get other people to do our bidding, even without their knowledge or consent, even if it's against their self-interest and against their sense of self-preservation. So, you know, then they started creating the Manchurian Candidate through mind control techniques. And then in 1962, really, they launched the geoengineering programs of the world. Actually, which had been going on since World War II, especially with the United States and Great Britain, the militaries of these countries have been weaponizing the weather, steering hurricanes, creating floods and droughts, etc. And this has been mostly under the radar, but yet the patents are there, the inventions are there, the history is there for anybody who cares to look. And so as a geography professor for 30 years over three universities, I decided to look. This is about the time I retired in 2011. I put together a PowerPoint presentation for the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco, to which I'd been invited to a panel discussion on man-made climate in the skies, playing God with nature and the environment. And I looked at the patents and I looked at the history of geoengineering or weather warfare, weather modification. And that's on my naturalclimatechange.com website, or excuse me, it's also naturalclimatechange.org website. And I would invite people who are listening to take a look at that right now, because there's three documents there that I would like to kind of focus on a little bit. And then I would like to get a little bit more into my own personal story, if that'd be all right. And the three documents are, number one, open letter to policymakers, colleagues, students, and citizens, disproofs of the hypothesis of AGW, anthropogenic global warming. And that's number one, open letter PDF. So anybody can click on that and read that. I wrote that probably around 2010 when I was still a professor at Cal State University Stanislaus. The second one, which of course is the political end of this, is Green Global Dictatorship, Regional Governance, UN Agenda 21, Sustainable Development, and the Wildlands Project. And then the third one is the PowerPoint presentation that I mentioned, Man-Made Climate Change in the Skies or Playing God with the Atmosphere and the Earth. And between the three of these documents, and they're not that long, they could easily make a very good book. But of course, many books have been written about this, especially in the last 20 years. This would be, I think, a very good introduction to somebody who wants a factual-based understanding of what's going on, which is the co-option of science by a political movement and intelligence agencies, et cetera. Very much like what we've seen with the COVID and the vaccine. We see the systematic corruption, co-option of science and scientists. We see certain scientists who say the right things being promoted and paid well, getting lots of, airplay at, the major conferences and the major journals, et cetera. And then we see those who say the wrong thing, which chances are is actually the honest thing. We see that their careers being suppressed and they are marginalized. And of course, in extreme examples, they're killed. We know this certainly happens. Most recently, the guy who invented the PCR test, Kerry Mullis, was killed at an opportune time when he was challenging Fauci and saying Fauci doesn't know anything. This is just one of many examples. And of course, in the mind control area, we know the British scientists who were killed I guess 10 years or so, all of a sudden. There's many, many examples of governments that retaliate against scientists who just, you know, who are willing to put their careers on a limb. Now, what's interesting to me, Andy, is that a real scientist is somebody who is driven to uncover the truth. So there's a real conflict here. If you are a real scientist, you have kind of a code of ethics, just like the Hippocratic Oath of a doctor, do no harm. But because the power elite, governments of the world controlled by the power elites and the intelligence agencies and the militaries have these, you know, political agendas, they tend to back certain people who say the right things, and then they suppress the others. Very, very. This often winds up causing great tragedy. You know, I mean, when somebody is offed secretly by the government, like Kerry Mullis was, this is a tragedy. You know, this is a tragedy for humanity. It's a tragedy for the Mullis family, etc. So, and this, I think, gets into my story a little bit. I'll pause there, and if you want to say something, I'll jump into my story. This is something I haven't done before on our show, but I think it's very pertinent now to talk about how this affects human beings.
Yes, well, sorry, I'm getting feedback. I don't know why. Just to let you know that we were going to play, folks, the Greta Thunberg clip later in the show. But I've since looked at the comments, and it sounded very strange coming out of her mouth. And, of course, some POS out there has edited something to make it sound like it shouldn't. And it absolutely sickens me with all the evidence around the world that you get these deceptive individuals that will literally try and make someone sound like they're saying something the opposite of what they believe, because, you know, they either think they're being funny or they want to be deceptive. There's enough trouble going on around the world without people splicing things together to make people sound like they're saying the opposite of what they believe. This truly does disgust me. So fortunately, I picked up on that before we broadcast it. It continues to go on, and it will continue to do so. I don't know where these people get off. You know, I'm the sort of person that if I cheated to win a game, I wouldn't have won that game because I cheated. But these people will do anything to muddy the waters. So I just wanted to share that with the audience, and then back to you, Eric.
Yeah, and of course, yeah, this we can get back to her later as a PR, a PR spokesperson. So my grandfather was born in Sweden. Otto Reinhold Carlsson, son of Carl. His father was Carl Larsson, and in Sweden, of course, the last name is the father's first name with son on the end. He came to the United States about the age of 16, I believe, after having spent a couple years sailing around the world as a cabin boy because times were tough in Sweden. He got a letter somewhere. This is back, you know, probably around before the turn of the last century, late 1800s. Got a letter at one of the ports, because he sailed all around the world, that his family had migrated to Illinois. And so he went to Illinois and met up with his family, and then didn't know a word of English, but launched into schools and got through, learned English on the way, and actually went through, finished elementary school, high school, college, and got a degree in the seminary and became a Lutheran minister, where he moved out to Seattle, Washington, and started a mission for sailors. Of course, he had been a sailor, and he knew their problems. And it's called the Compass. And I understand he was really quite a guy, a very sturdy guy and very, very kind of charismatic. I never met him. He died before I was born in 1949. But he had six children, the oldest of which was a daughter, and she died. And then the five boys, and my dad was in the middle, Thor Nels Vincent Karlstrom. And Thor and his close brother, Leroy, who was just 16 months younger, were lifelong friends. And it's them that really this show is going to be dedicated to, Thor and Leroy Karlstrom. They both made it to about 95 years old, and they died within the last 6 years, both with serious physical impairments, but their minds very sharp. Well, Thor got his PhD at the University of Chicago. A very bright young man, very dedicated, very hardworking. In geology. And on his committee was a star by the name of, well, now a star. At the time, he wasn't a star. It was J. Harlan Bretz, who figured out that the Channeled Scablands and the American Northwest were caused by the flooding of Glacial Lake Missoula numerous times. At first, he only figured it once, but that was back in the 40s and 50s and 60s that he did his work. And nobody believed him, and nobody believed him, and nobody believed him, thought he was a nut. And then later on, 30 years later, other scientists went and proved him right. This is the way it is in science. You know, you stick to your guns, you let the data speak for itself, and you present it as meticulously as you can. And this, of course, was my father's pattern. And he started out teaching a geology at a small Swedish college in New Jersey called Augustana. No, excuse me, Uppsala. He had gone to Augustana College, which is a Swedish college in Iowa. But then he started teaching at Uppsala. And then within a year or two, the U.S. Geological Survey asked him to come to Virginia or to the D.C. area to be a scientist with the U.S. Geological Survey, which he did about the time I was born in 1949. And immediately he signed on with the Alaska Terrain and Permafrost branch, which was working with the military to map the surface deposits in Alaska. So he was not around much when I was in young, because every summer he was up there doing field work. Well, it didn't take long for him to realize that the real story up there was the story of the history of glacial advances and retreats, because, of course, there were so many glaciers up there. And there was so much, there was a pattern of repeating glacial advance and retreat that could be deduced, could be inferred from mapping the deposits, and more importantly, dating them with the new radiocarbon dating, which had just come out. Libby, another University of Chicago graduate in 1949, discovered radiocarbon dating. And so the USGS said, okay, Thor and other geologists, please send us back all the samples of organic material that you would like to find out the age of. So, and then we'll try out this new technique. So this was an absolute dating technique, and it was kind of a breakthrough in geology. And so he had the benefit of that. So he was looking at glacial moraines and tidal flats and all kinds of indicators of changes in the landscape in the past based on the advances and retreats of glaciers, which of course occur in temperature. And he, early on in the 50s and 60s, was writing professional papers. By 1961, he put out a paper with the National Academy of Sciences from New York State, which was kind of chaired by one of the geology's geniuses named Rhodes Fairbridge, who wrote five or six major encyclopedias. You know, brilliant mind. And Thor's paper was... Well, it's on my website. If we go over to, let's just look at the, we'll go back to my website if people are listening. You'll see naturalclimatechange.org, and then you'll see a whole bunch of headings: climate science, scientific context, origins of the anthropogenic global warming fraud, magnitude of natural climate change, in which I share some of my published work, and then at the very upper right, frequency of natural climate change, and then I share the published work of my father, Dr. Thor Karlstrom. And this was, and then if we go down below the next line, it's climate politics, political context, control of energy, geoengineering, weather warfare, global government, and new world religion. All of these things are kind of brought in. And of course, the whole global warming fraud, the climate change thing, is the centerpiece of the fraudulent environmental movement that's, you know, been pushed by the United Nations. And you know, academic, you know, universities around the world and Greta Thunberg and everything. But all of that, of course, has to sweep away the facts of the way the Earth really works. And that means it has to kind of stomp on the careers of those diligent scientists like Thor Karlstrom, who spent their whole lives dedicated to understanding the natural patterns of climate change. And Thor, back in the 50s, was correlating the timing of the glacial advances and retreats that he was determining and mapping and identifying in Alaska with the record from the bottom of the ocean in these deep sea cores. Right after World War II, there were major scientific projects that sent boats around the world to pull up cores of ooze from the bottom of the oceans. And then they brought these back to the labs, and the core would be made of, you know, muck and guck and goo ooze and little foraminifer and other critters that had, you know, lived at the surface and then died and then fell to the bottom of the ocean. And the reason he did that is because, and other scientists, whenever you're dealing with a climate record on land, you're dealing with a system where there's been erosion and deposition and erosion and deposition, therefore a partial record. But on the bottom of the ocean, you have a continuous record because there's no real erosion down there. So the people who are specialists at studying little small organic creatures, biologic creatures like foraminifera, you know, we're studying these all over the world, even in the 50s, and coming up with a pattern of changes in the sea surface temperature inferred from the types of critters that live down there and the ratio of different oxygen isotopes, O18 to O16, which is thought to represent changes in the volume of ice on land. In other words, when the glaciers are big on land, like over Canada and Northern Europe, sea level drops, temperatures change, and different organisms live at the surface of the earth. And all of these various lines of evidence then are put together. Well, Thor, my dad, who I have great respect for, you might notice, was one of the hardest workers I've ever seen in my life. He would stay up till 2 and 3 o'clock in the at night, commonly working on his time series, working on correlating this climate record with that climate record, working on, I mean, he was just, he loved it. And he had his pipe, and he was a good father, but he, you know, for him, science came first. Just like God came first for his father, the Lutheran minister, Thor kind of transplanted that dedication to science, and he was a brilliant mind, and he loved it. And so anyway, all his life, I've got his records in Crestone, Colorado. I've got his books, I've got his libraries, I've got file cabinets full of his drawings. He had gone into commercial art first, so he's a good artist. And he would make these time series analyses showing how temperature changed over time. And, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these diagrams. And then he got into correlating cultural changes in the different civilizations with climate changes, etc. And he came up with, over time, even in 1961, with this New York Academy of Sciences paper that he wrote, he came up with the astroclimatic hypothesis, which correlated the timing of advance or changes in temperature and moisture with variations in the Earth's orbit around the sun. It's called the astronomic theory of climate change that was really kind of perfected by a Serbian mathematician named Milutin Milankovic, who was working in a pre-computer era, but he was another person like Thor who was just, you know, totally dedicated to science and figuring out the patterns of climate change back in the 30s in Serbia. And the Milankovic theory said that variations in the Earth's orbit around the sun, specifically changes in the, three changes. There's a 100,000 year cycle that has to do with what's called the precession of the equinoxes, which I won't explain right now. And then there's a 40,000 year cycle that has to do with the obliquity of the ecliptic, which I won't explain right now. And then there's a 20,000 year cycle. Well, excuse me, the 20,000 year cycle is the precession of the equinoxes. And the 100,000 year cycle is the eccentricity of their orbit going from basically circular to more elliptical. And these three combine, these natural cycles combine as, so that you have differences in where solar radiation is concentrated over the surface of the Earth. And sometimes it's concentrated in the northern hemisphere at the high latitudes, and sometimes it's more concentrated over the equator. Well, at times when it's more concentrated over at the high latitudes, that's when the big glaciers melt. And when the solar radiation is more concentrated over the equator, that's when it gets cold in the high latitudes, and that's when the glaciers advance. And that's a simplified version of it. But anyway, so he had well-dated glacial advances and retreats in Alaska. He was able to correlate with the Milankovic theory of climate change, which also matched up with the Deep Sea Corps record. And this was back in the 50s and 60s, 1950s and 60s. That'll be history for many of your listeners. And yet we had these brilliant scientists which had come up with pretty much, a very robust explanation for our climate, natural climate cycles. This, again, there was a guy named Kukla, who was from Czechoslovakia, who wrote a paper in Science in 1977, which added another major piece of proof to this model. And he looked at the lush soil sequence in Czechoslovakia and dated the sediments and found, it correlates with the Milankovitch theory of astronomic climate change based on the math. It correlates with the deep sea core record based on the physical evidence. And so in 1977, it was proved. Well, about that time, the UN had gotten a hold of this issue. they had noticed that this, you know, could be used. The whole climate change thing could be used. And back in the 70s, there was a slight cooling trend. And in 1976, we saw a great big Time magazine cover story saying, you know, the Earth's getting colder and we're going to a new glaciation, you know, lots of sensationalism there. And then it started warming very slightly, and so we have roughly 30 year cycles of slight warming, slight cooling. So then they got in the whole global warming thing. And so the politicians grabbed hold of the subject because of its usefulness to them. And the politicians, of course, are connected with the economic powers, the bankers, and of course, both are represented by the intelligence agencies who manage our societies, as we saw in our last conversation about the 60s rock stars and the intelligence agencies. So we have a very, very controlled system, and that control extends right into the universities and to the science networks, as we'll see, because Thor's closest brother, Leroy, also got his PhD at the University of Chicago in political science. And his major thesis advisor was Hans Morgenthau, a German Jew who was probably Illuminati. And Leroy then would have studied real politic. Real politic is, hey, this is the way it's always been. It's power politics, it's geopolitics. This is the way the world works. You know, it's Machiavelli. You have to lie to the people. Might makes right. Ends justify the means. Divide and conquer and all this stuff. Which is the way, of course, our governments are functioning, and particularly our intelligence agencies, which control our governments. And Leroy then went on to work with the CIA. So he's a very high-level academic kind of CIA guy who would have, you know, probably written reports for the president and that sort of thing. So who knows exactly what he did. But again, Leroy and Thor kept their friendship throughout their entire lives. But where it gets interesting here, I think, is that, in 1981, I graduated with a PhD from University of Calgary, Alberta. I had gotten very turned on by this subject of climate change. When I was in college, I took a climatology class. I read this 1961 paper of my father's and I did a report on it. And I thought this was just wild. You know, I mean, look at all the different subjects that he's pulling together to try to reconstruct the past climates. You know, it's like, this blew my mind. And I thought my dad was kind of, you know, a fuddy-duddy. And yet this is very, very challenging. And so I went on, got a master's and a PhD, and I became a professor of physical geography. And he and I actually worked together on various projects in Northern Arizona, you know, looking at soils and alluvial deposits in the Navajo Reservation in the Black Mesa area for a long time. And we published some papers together, et cetera. So that's why I wound up with his library. And he taught me everything he could. So I am well versed in his astroclimatic model of climate change. And he didn't talk just about the Milankovitch theory, the variations in the Earth's orbit around the sun. He also talked about the importance of variations in the moon's orbit around the Earth, the tidal forces, which have cycles of shorter, high-frequency cycles of 550 years, 275, 1,100 years, 1,700 years. And that these cycles then, you know, kind of double up like it's harmonics, like an electrical engineer would know about harmonics. And in fact, we live in the atmosphere of the sun. And the sun is giving out, you know, electromagnetic radiation. And the sun has, then we have to integrate the sunspots because it has 11, 22, 90 year cycles. Okay, so Thor put all these together in his astroclimatic model. The problem was that the CIA wanted to control the weather, and they wanted to use this global warming thing and the powers that be to be kind of a front, a cover story for their geoengineering weather warfare project. So the UN especially took up the ball and started all these intergovernmental panels on climate change, in which they cherry picked the scientists who would say what they wanted. And come out with these reports every several years and talk about, you know, how humans are destroying the earth and humans are destroying the climate. And nothing could be further from the truth, you know, because, the whole scenario is built on a whole series of lies, you know, like carbon dioxide is a pollutant, when in fact, of course, it's the life of plants and therefore the basis of all life on the planet. 4 molecules per 10,000, you know, about 380 parts per million is what we have in carbon dioxide. It's a trace gas. And without it, we don't have photosynthesis. And in fact, we breathe it out as we breathe in oxygen. So the plants and the animals are always, mutually supporting each other with our exchange of gases, which now is being interrupted with these, you know, infernal masks. We're breathing our own carbon dioxide. If you get up to around, 100,000 parts per million or 10%, yeah, you can die from carbon dioxide. But we're at 370 parts per million, 4 molecules in 10,000. So to talk about a carbon footprint is, you know, you have to be an idiot. You have to have forgotten all eighth grade biology to realize, to believe, to be sucked into this lie that this miracle gas, carbon dioxide, which is only one of the greenhouse gases, by the way, is somehow responsible for destroying the earth. The only way they can get away with these lies is they own the propaganda system and they just keep repeating them, you know. And so this is what's been going on since the 70s, the repetition of these lies by the media. And apparently our politicians and Greta Thunberg and our media, you know, didn't take eighth grade biology. They don't know anything about this, the way the world works scientifically, or they couldn't make the statements that they make. You know, there's a whole series of lies that go with the catastrophic man-caused global warming scenario, one of which, you know, is that the sea is rising, you know, and all these islands are going to disappear. Well, we had a little ice age that culminated about 1630 AD when climate was a little bit colder. And of course, at that time, we had the bubonic plague and lifespans were shorter and more disease and worse agricultural productivity because it was colder. And then started warming up on its own. Nature was warming up. And sea level has been rising about the rate of 7 inches per century ever since. And has been unaffected completely by human activity, burning of fossil fuels, et cetera. But the powers that be needed a way to regulate the use of energy. And 85% of the energy used in the planet is coming from fossil fuels, coal, gas, and oil. And when we burn fossil fuels, of course, carbon dioxide is released. So if they can say, oh, carbon dioxide is destroying the planet, which is a huge lie, we're relatively low now compared to in our carbon dioxide content compared to the geologic past, which has been much, much higher. If they can make that lie stick, then they can say, okay, we need to tax your use of carbon. We need to decide that you don't get to have any more resources, you know, after the age of 50 because you only get a certain carbon allotment and all this just happy horse nonsense. I mean, you really have to be swindled to believe these lies. I mean, the polar bears are doing fine. Everything does fine when it warms up a little bit. Life, plant life, animal life always does better when it's warmer. Colder is when, you know, things shut down. So they have had to sell these gigantic lies. And just to give you an idea of the last 2 million years, which is the quaternary period of earth science, and I taught quaternary studies, and I was treasurer of the American Quaternary Association. In addition to being my father's son and learning from him, I learned academically and I had my own career and I published my own papers in scientific journals. And the last 2 to 3 million years is we call the Ice Age, which repeatedly the glaciers have advanced and they repeatedly retreated about based on the deep sea cores about 20 times in the last 2 million years. Again, that 100,000 year cycle. I know I'm talking fast, but I'm trying to cram a lot in here, Andy. I'm sorry. People can listen to it again if they need to. But again, I taught quaternary environments. I was treasurer of the American Quaternary Association. The quaternary is the last 2 to 3 million years of Earth history. We had about 20 major glacial, interglacial fluctuations that correlate about with the Milankovitch theory of climate change as recorded in the deep sea core sediments and the Czechoslovakian Lust sequence and the land records around the world. And climate during that time is when during the full glacials, about 10 degrees centigrade cooler than now. And then during the interglacials, when it's warm like today, the temperatures rise warmer than now. And about 120,000 years ago, we were in the last full interglacial. Sea levels were maybe 2 to 3 meters higher than now. Warmth-loving, plants and animals moved higher into Canada. We can map these changes over time, you know, looking at the fossil record. And then during the colder periods, like 20,000 years ago, we were in a full glacial period. The last full interglacial. Canada's covered 2 to 3 miles of ice, which came down into the United States, into Wisconsin, left deposits. And sea level dropped about 300, 400 feet because all that volume of water went into the land ice, fresh water. And so, there were people living at that time during the last full glacial. We know humans have been around for 100 to 200,000 years in our present form. And so they were scurrying around trying to, survive and stay warm, and we're living in caves during this time. We have cave remnants and cave paintings, etc., in Spain and France, etc. But then about 12,000 years ago, the glaciers had melted, and we were into what's called the Holocene epoch, which is part of the Quaternary, which is the present interglacial. So modern agriculture then started, because all of a sudden the climate got warm and stable, and it has been for the last 10,000, 11,000, 12,000 years. It's been relatively mild compared to the previous 2 to 3 million years of radical, often radical climate change, which makes it very difficult to survive. And the last 10 to 11,000 years is called the Holocene. That's the period of the age of agriculture. That's, and then of course, man develops his literacy, 5,000-6,000 years ago. Cities emerge, and the rest is history. History starts when we start writing things down, and the Chinese did that about 5,000 years ago, etc., and it happened about the same time in the Middle East. So we are the beneficiaries. Our species is the beneficiaries of about the last 11,000 years being warm and stable. Now, the warmest time within the last 11,000 years, about 5,000-7,000 years ago, called the altothermal or the hypsothermal in Europe, and it was a little bit warmer than now. And since then, the climate has been, again, this is based on many time series where you map temperature on the y-axis and time on the x-axis, on the flat axis. And the time series shows slight cooling for the last 5,000 years. So we are slowly, very imperceptibly almost, but slowly sliding into another cooling phase based on natural climate cycles. Well, see, this narrative, which happens to be the truth, doesn't fit with the global warming alarmism, which says that humans are destroying the planet by burning fossil fuels, which is just the most preposterous lie that I think anybody could have ever thought of. But the people that control us, as you know, are the sons of Satan. And, Satan is the liar and the father of the lies. And they use these lies opportunistically to corral us into doing stupid things and being controlled. And, of course, they use these lies also to kill us off, is what we're seeing with the COVID. We are ruled by the sons and daughters of Satan, very much to extent as your guest Dr. Lorraine Day pointed out. So anyway, okay. So there's my father with a very distinguished career. In the 1960s, he gets caught in a political battle due to these larger factors that he didn't know about, back in the Washington, D.C. area where our family lived, and there was a power struggle within the U.S. Geological Survey. you know, about interpreting the climate record based on the glacial record with these scientists who were combing, you know, America to try to, you know, get the story. And scientists often have fairly large, robust egos, and they all want to be the one who gets to tell the story. Well, and then politics inserts itself, and gee, this story is a little more useful for our bigger objective than this story. The cycles, we don't really like that because we want to control the weather. We want to make people think that climate change is random and that whatever happens, you know, is either due to burning of fossil fuels or whatever. In other words, we want to, you know, control the situation per that CIA memo. We want to control the weather. We want to use the weather as a warfare technique, which, of course, it is now used as. That's another program I think we've done. Or at least we talked about it. Thor, my dad, more or less lost that political battle, even while the geologists in communist Russia and communist China were kind of settling in on the cycles interpretation of the geologic record for the Quaternary. In the United States, they were going for the stochastic or random climate change model because it works for the politics. And so Thor kind of lost the battle. And at one point in 1965 or 1966, when I was still in high school, he was given the choice to either leave the Geologic Survey because he lost the political battle, won the scientific battle in the long run, I think, but lost the political battle in the short run. Very common. And he was given a choice. He was either going to be a professor in Missoula, Montana, which I kind of wish he did, but that's all right, or go map the moon in Flagstaff, Arizona at the astrogeology branch, because they were planning to, you know, do the Apollo missions and put a man on the moon. And Thor had taught air photo interpretation. He was one of the best in the survey at, you know, meticulous interpreter of these imagery, photographic imagery, and mapping that the deposits that you see on photos, air photo interpretation. He had taught that, and he had done lots of it. And so they got him mapping the moon, and he made some maps of the moon. Walter Cronkite interviewed him when in 1969, when, you know, Neil Armstrong went to the moon, or supposedly went to the moon. That's another subject. So Thor had a certain amount of notoriety at that point, at least on CBS and other national news outlets. He was with the astrogeology branch, and our family had moved to Flagstaff, Arizona, which is where I finished high school and college and eventually taught Northern Arizona University. Then after the moon thing was kind of ended, he went back to his studies of climate change and looking at the high frequency climate cycles based on the alluvial record or stream deposits on the Navajo reservation. And it was me that actually was the bridge to his work on that, because I was this archaeology student for a little while at Prescott College. And we did the first field season up on Black Mesa that was paid for by Peabody Coal, because they were going to strip mine the coal, and therefore they were obligated to go ahead and map the sites that they were about to destroy. So there was a contract there between Prescott College and Peabody Coal, and we went up and dug these sites. I brought my father up there, and he met the anthropologists doing the work, and then they proceeded to have a multi-year, decadal collaboration, five of them, a tree ring expert from University of Arizona, a pollen expert from Northern Arizona, two archaeology experts, and my father, the geology expert. And they went on to write papers for Science and other, you know, top flight journals about the high frequency climate changes recorded in the alluvial deposits and soils near all these archaeological sites of the Pueblo Indians. Well, this was the latter phase of Thor's career. He kept doing that, and I worked with him on that. And, you know, he was a great guy. He was a lot of fun. He had a great sense of humor. He was, bullheaded as all get out. He had quite a temper. He could put away a half a bottle of scotch an evening with no problem, you know. But, you know, Thor is a good name for him, you know, with his lightning bolts of anger occasionally. But in general, wonderful guy. Certainly one of my best friends in my life, and I have great respect for him as a human being and as a scientist and as a father. Meanwhile, Leroy, of course, working with the CIA, not knowing exactly what he's doing, but he's coming by, and those guys are having fun and talking and joking, and And but Leroy keeps showing up in my life for some reason. And when I was at Northern Arizona University as a beginning professor, he would show up, and we started a quaternary studies master's. And Thor, in 1984, I started in 81. Thor was hounded out of the U.S. Geological Survey in 1984. At the age of 64, did not want to quit because he loved his work so much. He fought it, but then he lost. And again, it was the political science aspect that he was not successful in. I think his sciences holds up. But he was hounded out. So he was kind of academically homeless. But I was at Northern Arizona University, and we had a quaternary studies master's program. So we managed to get him an office, and the grad students just loved him. He taught a course, and here's a guy with all this experience, great sense of humor, loved to go out in the field. And so anyway, he was quite popular. But then in 1985 and 86, my career started taking a southern turn. And in retrospect now, I realize this was a CIA setup. I was stung right out of that university. Didn't know it at the time, but I think my uncle had something to do with it in the CIA. So I was just way overworked. My life was, I won't go into the details of the sting, but it was quite elaborate. And I could sometime, because it's an interesting story. But I did quit Northern Arizona University. Thor, of course, was very upset about that, because that was his connection to academics. And then several years later, I got a job teaching at Cal State University Stanislaus after doing some other things and being an adjunct professor at University of Wyoming and Boulder, Colorado, et cetera. But anyway, I think that Leroy would always have been, kind of looking at this thing from the side of power politics, which is that the government has to use this issue and therefore would not buy into the incredible work and conclusions that his brother had been, Thor, my father, had been coming to all his life. And this was shown to me in 2006 or 7, no, probably 2010. Thor had been divorced by my wife, or my mother, and he was on his own. He was now living in the basement of his closest brother, Leroy, and they were both retired government people. And Thor, by this time, had macular degeneration. He could hardly see, but his mind was sharp. By this time, Leroy had neuropathy. He could hardly move, but his mind was very sharp. And they could still banter back and forth and drink and have a great time. Even though they were very compromised physically. Anyway, so I brought a movie up there and visited these cranky fun guys who, very dear to me, and showed them a movie that I showed in my climatology class. I taught climatology at Cal State University. And it was called The Great Global Warming Swindle. It was made by a British filmmaker named Martin Durkin. It came out in 2007, which really just nailed what happened and how the whole thing was a political fraud and used to serve these purposes. And I brought this video up and I thought, well, this would be interesting to show to these two guys. And Thor couldn't hardly see it, of course, because he was blind almost. But he was grinning because he could hear it, and he agreed with it, of course. But by this time, he learned his to be polite. And Leroy didn't say hardly anything, and he just made a face and kind of shook his head no afterwards. And that moment when Thor looked expectantly at his brother, Leroy, and Leroy, the ex-CIA, kind of frowned and shook his head, that told me volumes about those two people. Now here, Leroy, always the politician, always the CIA operative, he wasn't going to let the truth in, even if his brother spent his whole career, a brilliant scientist, mapping out the patterns of natural climate change, coming up with the astroclimatic model theory of climate change, which I have no doubt. Oh, I have little doubt, actually, that will be proved in the future. And I may still write some papers on this because I've got all these papers. Leroy just shook his head. Now, Leroy was a political scientist. He didn't know squat about science. Thor, his brother, had dedicated his whole life to it. I was a full professor at that time in physical geography. I taught climatology. I taught earth science. Leroy just shook his head. It didn't matter. The truth does not matter to these people. Leroy CIA politics, might makes right, you have to fool the people, divide and conquer. I mean, this is what Machiavellian thinking leads to. It leads to a world of a castle of lies, which is what we have now. So with all due respect to both of these gentlemen, including my uncle, the guy who is a scientist is going for the truth. The guy who is a politician and an intelligence agent is going for control, power, manipulation, short-term advantage. It's always war for these guys. Always was an old cold warrior from World War II. Always going to have to beat the other guy. They don't care about the truth. And this really sunk in in this one moment, just looking at their two faces. And I thought, you know, I'm sure glad that my father was the scientist and not the spy, because if my father had been the spy, I would have hated his guts. You know, as it was, I rebelled anyway, you know, and we had our issues, but I wound up thinking that this man is really a great man. But anyway, I'll stop there, Andy, if you want to make a comment. I thought that it might be appropriate to share some of these insights. I think Thor and my career were both derailed. I think Thor and I were both targeted in these as weapons testing platforms for these directed energy and neuroweapons. So because we were on the wrong side of the scientific fence, we got put on watch lists. We became guinea pigs in Thor's later life. He felt all these horrendous sensations below his skin and his scalp. Felt like bugs were crawling on him. And I've got various articles on my gang stalking mind control cults.com website talking about the symptoms of being attacked by electromagnetic weapons. And is this how the U.S. this is how the U.S. government treats its scientists, who was a GS-14 or above, very high PhD, worked his butt off, and then gets put on a watch list. Now, that infuriates me. My own targeting makes me mad. My father's targeting makes me furious with the U.S. government, and especially with the CIA. These people need to be punished. They need to be called out. They need to be brought to justice, because playing God like this, they've become devils.
Thank you, Eric. Very interesting and very personal story today. We are pretty much out of time, but I found that fascinating, what you were going through and your history and your family history and the interesting relationship between the scientist and the spy. So is there anything else you would like to add before we go for today?
No, thanks, Andy. Always a pleasure to talk to you. And I just thought it might be appropriate to wrap these things together a little bit. These are topics we have talked about in the past, but this time I pulled my own story into it. I would like to honor my father with honoring his work, but I would also like to honor him by saying that his work has been suppressed, as Kerry Mullis and other great medical specialists are being suppressed now. The UN and the CIA and the CFR and the, you know, Royal Institute of International Affairs and the central bankers and the Federal Reserve and the City of London, they don't care about the truth. They care about their power. And the rest of us are just pawns in their hands. We are guinea pigs. But I think I share my father's optimism that in the long run, the honest people with integrity will be honored. And it's our job to make sure that happens, to make sure that the liars do not carry the day. Right now, they're sure going for broke. But we have to hold on to the truth. We have to hold on to our integrity, I believe. And we have to insist that not only Jesus Christ is Lord and God is good and forgiving and loving, but we have to insist upon the truth. Otherwise, we cannot really survive as a species, and probably shouldn't. So thank you so much, Andy. I hope you have a great month, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you so much, Eric. Fascinating information as always. So folks, you've been listening to Dr. Eric Karlstrom today. We're going to come up with a title after the show. I want to thank all of you for listening. Eric and I'll be back with you next month. I'll of course be back with you all tomorrow. And until then, have a wonderful day, and bye for now.